Season 2 of Love in Context podcast welcomes you. Get ready for engaging, unscripted conversations with your hosts, Ben and Spencer. Our mission remains unchanged: to explore the Bible through the powerful lens of love.
In this new season, we'll embark on a journey together, unearthing fresh insights and gaining deeper understanding of how we can love God and live out our faith in practical ways.
So let's dive into this season of Love in Context, where love and the context of the Bible intersect to transform our lives.
We are back.
Back in purple. Wait.
Ready for another conversation.
I said back in purple because the frame of the video that we're doing is in purple, but it occurred to me that when we actually put this on YouTube, it's not purple.
Nothing's purple.
No.
Nothing's purple. I'll wear a purple shirt for you next time.
Yeah.
Yeah. We are talking, I'm not exactly sure how to say it, but it is actually an Egyptian pharaoh. It's either Necho II or Necho II.
I'm going to go with Necho II, yeah. And if it's wrong, deal with it.
Yeah. Some of you are like, who the what? When we said Necho II. Now, he is a pharaoh that appeared during the late 7th century BC. The Bible literally has three references to him. One is 2 Chronicles 35, 20 through 24. The other is 2 Kings 23:34. All right. And then the other is in Jeremiah. So those are the references that we have for him. And there is literally just a handful of verses on this king.
Yeah, I'm going to read those real quick, actually, yeah. If you don't mind.
Yeah.
So it's first thing in 2 Kings, it says, while Josiah was king, okay, Josiah, mm-hmm. We'll talk about him, Pharaoh Necho, king of Egypt, went up to the Euphrates River to help the king of Assyria. King Josiah marched out to meet him in the battle, but Necho faced him and killed him at Megiddo. Josiah's servants brought his body in a chariot from Megiddo to Jerusalem and buried him in his own tomb. And the people of the land took Jehoahaz, son of Josiah, and anointed him and made him king in place of his father.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, I think that was... No, 335. Jehoahaz was 23 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem 3 months. His mother's name was Hamutal, daughter of Jeremiah. She was from Libna. He did evil in the eyes of the Lord, just as his predecessors had done. Pharaoh Necho put him in chains at Riblah in the land of Hamath, that he might not reign in Jerusalem, and he imposed on Judah a levy of 100 talents of silver and a talent of gold. Pharaoh Necho made Eliakim, son of Josiah, king in place of his father Josiah, and changed Eliakim's name to Jehoiakim. But he took Jehoahaz and carried him off to Egypt, and there he died. Jehoiakim paid Pharaoh Necho the silver and gold he demanded. In order to do so, he taxed the land and exacted the silver and gold from the people in the land according to their assessments.
Mm-hmm.
Not a great story.
No. Not a great story.
And in the book of Jeremiah, this is, it says, concerning Egypt, a message about Egypt. This is the word of the Lord that came to Jeremiah the prophet concerning the nations. Concerning Egypt, this is a message against the army of Pharaoh Necho, king of Egypt, which was defeated at Carchemish on the Euphrates River by Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, in the 4th year of Jehoiakim, son of Josiah, king of Judah. Prepare your shields, both large and small, and march out for battle. Harness the horses, mount the steeds. Take your positions with helmets on. Polish your spears, put on your armor. What do I see? They are terrified. They are retreating. Their warriors are defeated. They flee in haste without looking back, and there is terror on their side. The swift cannot flee, nor the strong escape. In the north by the north river Euphrates, they stumble and fall. Who is this that rises like the Nile? Like rivers of surging waters. Egypt rises like the Nile, like rivers of surging water. She says, I will rise and cover the earth. I will destroy cities and their people. Charge, you horses, drive furiously, you charioteers. March on, you warriors, men of Cush, and who carry shields. Men of Lydia who draw the bow. But that day belongs to the Lord Almighty, a day of vengeance, and for vengeance of his foes.
Mm-hmm. And then the other account that we have is 2 Chronicles 35, 20 through 24. Now, this is going to sound a little bit like the king's account, mm-hmm. right?
Because they're written from two different perspectives.
Two different perspectives. After all of this, After all of this, when Josiah had set the temple in order, Necho, king of Egypt, went up to fight Carchemish and the Euphrates. Josiah marched to meet him in battle, but Necho sent messengers to him saying, what quarrel is there, king of Judah, between you and me? It is not you I am attacking at this time, but the house of which I am at war. God told me to hurry and to stop and stop opposing. So stop opposing God, who is with me. Stop opposing God, who is with me, or he will destroy you. Hmm. Really interesting, right? Necho's trying to twist the words. Twist the words of the Lord here. Okay. Josiah, however, would not turn away from him, but distinguished himself. Distinguished himself to engage in battle. He who would not listen to Necho had said to God's command, but went to fight him at the plain of Megiddo. Archers shot King Josiah, and he told his officers, "Take him away. I am badly wounded." So they took him out of the chariot and put him in another chariot and brought him to Jerusalem, where he died. He was buried in a tomb by his ancestors, and all of Judah and Jerusalem mourned for him.
So the interesting thing about the account in the Bible mm-hmm. is that, one, Necho seems to think that he's being called by God to do these things. Mm-hmm. And to be fair, he might have, because mm-hmm. Israel was in a firm state of rebellion.
Yes.
We'll talk about Josiah, because Josiah is the exception to the rule at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But it also does seem like he feels bad about killing Josiah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because the other guy steps in as king, and he's like, no, no, no. Mm-hmm. Puts him in chains, and then puts the son of Josiah on the throne.
Yeah. And you need to understand a kind of Egyptian culture a little bit in the history of Egypt on this, because Egypt essentially had three different ages, and there's different sub-ages that fit within that.
Right. But ages, are you talking about ages like...
like time frames.
Time frames, yeah. I'm just making sure people are aware.
Yeah, time frames. So like they had their early stage, which was like a lot of people refer to it as the age of the pyramids. It's the age of wealth, the age of power, prosperity. And then they had the shift in this middle time frame. And Necho, he comes in towards the middle to the end of that middle time frame. But they had this shift in this middle time frame where they actually went from worshiping multiple gods to, I think it was Pharaoh Osiris, was like, we're going to worship one god, which is the sun god. And there was actually rebellion and push against that. And so one of the things about Necho, if you look at historical accounts, is his whole thing was bringing glory back to Egypt,
mm-hmm.
right? Like restoring Egypt essentially to its glory days, right? And when you get to the third age of Egypt, they try to shift back to that, but then they do this blending of cultures towards the end of that, which you see with in Alexandria and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Now, if there's an Egyptologist listening to this and they're like, you mess it up on so many levels, just email us. We'll apologize.
Yeah, email us and then explain what we should have said.
Yes. Yeah. So understanding that, you have Necho, who is going to battle, not necessarily with Israel at the time, but he is allied with Babylon, and he is going to battle, and he is wanting to restore what Egypt used to be.
Okay, so let's pause there for a second, because we need to remind people where Israel is.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the smack dab center of the world, so if you want to trade anywhere...
You got to go through Israel.
Got to go through Israel. So if you're Egypt and you're wanting to reestablish your power,
mm-hmm.
what do you have to control?
Trade routes.
So that's why Necho's coming into Israel, is because he got to control the trade routes.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, listen, I'm not here to fight you. It's just going to be mine,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the things that Egypt has is, like, yes, they have horses and cattle and all these things, but why do they have those things? Because the Nile always floods, and they have tons of farming land in the Nile.
Yeah.
Right? So if there's a place that has food, which, by the way, whenever there's a famine in Egypt, that's not good,
mm-hmm.
right, in the Bible, means that there's a pretty bad famine.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the core of Egypt's wealth.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually not silver and gold. They do have a lot of that, but it's actually food.
Yeah, exactly. Well, their food, they trade, and then they have a lot of silver and gold because of that.
Yeah.
Right? And of course, you would have lots of horses and mm-hmm. goats and all these different animals, because you actually have feed
mm-hmm.
to be able to, like, raise them.
Yeah.
Right? You have chickens.
Yeah.
You got to feed them a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys eat a ton.
Mm-hmm.
And the more chickens you have, the more you got to be able to feed them.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have enough food, the chickens start dying. Or they start, like, killing each other, eating each other, because
they start
animals
eating each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, like, why does Egypt always have horses and all these? Because they got food.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these places, they don't have food in that kind of quantity.
Well, if you look at the history of Egypt, whenever they did have a downturn, they bounced back from that pretty quickly. because they were able to with the food, abundant food resource they had.
Well, and it's not just food. They had an abundance of types of food too. Mm-hmm. Like it wasn't just, you know, grain.
Yeah.
You know, they have fruits and they have vegetables and they have all sorts of things that are being grown in Egypt.
Yeah. So you have this restoration of power that Necho is trying to accomplish here. Egypt has been on this downward turn for a little bit, and he's trying to bring them back into a place where he's like, we're going to be a powerhouse nation once again. Okay. Go ahead. You were going to say something.
One of the other, like, there's other external accounts from the Bible that actually talk about Necho II. Mm-hmm. So, like, other historical places. So, we talked about this guy last week, Herodotus. Mm-hmm. Is a Greek historian. He actually mentions Necho in its military campaign, but he specifically talks about his involvement in the Battle of Carchemish. And there's a lot of, in the Egyptian records, various inscriptions, records describe Necho II's reign, including his military and building projects, such as he worked on a canal that connected the Nile to the Red Sea. Mm-hmm. Big deal, right? And then there is also talk about him in the Babylonian Chronicles as well. So Necho is not only found in the Bible, he's found in other places in history as well.
Mm-hmm. He's a real guy.
Yeah.
Right. He's a real guy. So he made this mistake though of allying with the Babylonians, right? Which at the time, let's give credit where credit's due. That seems like a decent plan, right? Mm-hmm. Like we want to become a powerhouse nation again. But we're not there. Let's ally with the powerhouse nation,
right?
Right. And what this alliance does is this puts Israel in a very tricky spot because they have the Babylonians on one side, powerhouse nation, and then they have Egypt rising again on the other side of them.
And not too long ago, they've been dealing with the Assyrians.
Yes. Right. So Israel's still bouncing back from this Assyrian fight. If you actually look at the we'll get into Josiah a little bit more in a minute, but if you actually look at Josiah's story, he inherited a kingdom that was not following the Lord, and the Lord had already declared punishment on them. But Josiah said, no, we are not following the ways of the Lord, and he turned that around. Mm-hmm. They still suffered the punishment because the Lord already declared that, right? Mm-hmm. And so you have this nation where the Lord's declared punishment for him. You have two power. Then you have Babylonia on one side, Egypt on the other side, and Egypt's trying to come in, take over trade routes so that they can rival Babylon in the near future.
Anytime you hear Babylon, we should go back to last week when we talked about Genesis. Nimrod in Genesis 10 founds two cities, Babel, Nineveh, Assyrian, and Babylonians, right? So a lot of times when you hear these names showing up in the Bible, you should think rebellious or not necessarily a great group of people.
Yeah.
Right. And so you're kind of like stuck between a rock and a hard place as Israel.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually think that's a really good place to pause and actually talk about Josiah.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
So Josiah is the king of Judah. He's the guy that actually dies in the skirmish with Necho.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But when he was 8 years old, now I want you to think about what you're doing when you were eight.
I was still rolling around outside in mud and, you know, like just trying to have fun.
Oh, man. I would love to hear your mom's reaction to her hearing you say that just now. She's probably like, yep, that's right.
Yeah. I grew up on a 400-acre camp. And
so he is, you can read about this in 2 Kings 22. It says that he, at 8 years old, he becomes king after the assassination of his father, Amon. Man, that's tough. Mm-hmm. Like, so 8 years old. Your dad's been assassinated, and now you're king, right? So he ascends to the throne, and one of the things that immediately starts happening is he starts major religious reforms to restore the temple to Yahweh, back to God. He's purging idolatry, and he's repairing the temple. And while they're repairing the temple, they find the Book of the Law, likely Deuteronomy, but like just by some of the things that they actually mention in the text, that it's probably Deuteronomy is what they found. Because once again, those of you that are on us on video, you see this. Like, this is a Bible that we have 66 books in. But when they had like books, they had scrolls that had like parts of each book or sometimes the entire book.
Yeah.
Right. Because paper was
a value commodity.
So if they found a scroll, they probably found one of the books of Torah. Right. And based on that, they think that he probably found Deuteronomy, and they start reading it, and he's like, oh, we haven't been doing any of this stuff, right? Mm-hmm. He's like, ah, we have not been doing good. So eight, you know, he's leading. And he's like, you know what? We're going to fix it. So go in, knock out the high places, go take down the Asherah poles. And he renews the covenant with God, leading his people to a commitment of following the law. And then he reinstated, this is a really cool thing, he reinstated the celebration of Passover.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Recognizing that, like, this story of being brought out of Egypt, right? Again, mm-hmm. like, that remembering where you come from. And one of my favorite part about Josiah is prior to him becoming king, prior to his birth, God had finally said, when it says, when you're reading 2 Kings, it's like, this king did evil in the sight of the Lord. This king did evil in the sight of the Lord. This king did evil in the sight of the Lord. And it happens over and over and over again. God goes, all right, we're done.
Uh-huh.
Like, we're gonna change this.
Mm-hmm.
And then Josiah shows up, and he is a man who just responds to seeing the word of God in his life. Like, God said, hey, destruction is coming. This country is getting overthrown. You're going into captivity. I've got to make sure you learn your lesson so that you can be my people the way I need you to be my people.
Yeah.
But then Josiah comes, and he's so obedient that God actually says to him, he says, because of you, like, destruction is coming, right?
Mm-hmm.
But because of you, it's not going to come until you're no longer here.
Mm-hmm.
Which he then continued to reign for 40 years,
mm-hmm.
right? Because of one person's faithfulness.
Yeah.
Now, granted, he's a king. I understand, like, he influences other things, but because of one person's faithfulness, the entire country is given a reprieve.
Yeah. Well, and yes, he was a king, but he ascended to the throne at eight, and the purging was one of the first things he did.
Right.
So when you talk about that, oftentimes when we read stories like this, we're like, oh, there was this king, and we think of, like, a older, more mature fellow. I was like, no, he was most likely doing this in his early teen years.
Yeah.
Like, cleaning up the temple and purging. And, like, there had to be a chunk of Israel who just wasn't taking him seriously.
Right.
Right? Because they're like, oh, there's a little boy king right here type thing. And so, and then he continues.
Well, he's king for now, but let's see if he gets assassinated. Right?
Exactly. Because that's what just happened. And so you have this young man who is bringing reform.
Mm-hmm.
And he's doing that from a young age. He's not mm-hmm. doing that from his 30s, 40s. He's doing that from 10, 15 years old.
And God, like, he says, listen, it's still going to happen, but
yeah.
because of your faithfulness.
Yeah.
It's not happening in your life.
Yeah.
And you just wonder, like, I almost feel like when I read things like that in the text, there's this invitation from God that he says, what about the rest of you?
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't tell me if all of Israel had turned out in sackcloth and ashes, going back to last week with Sennacherib, right?
Mm-hmm.
That they all turn out in sackcloth and ashes and are like, we're going to serve God.
Yeah.
We're going to be faithful. We're going to be generous. We're going to care for the mm-hmm. poor. We're going to love the people around us. We're going to put Torah on display.
Yeah.
That God doesn't say, all right,
mm-hmm.
let's do this, right?
But that doesn't happen.
Doesn't happen.
No.
Not yet, anyways.
So this is the story. This is the setup. This is where we're at. Two rising powers, a boy king in the middle. It's probably not the best term, but, you know, like a child king in the middle, right?
Boy king.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's at best probably doesn't know what he's doing. And then finds the word of the Lord, starts following after God's heart, and the Lord says, okay, it's not going to happen in your lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so you look at these stories, and so then you have Egypt wanting to take over these trade routes. They've allied themselves with Babylon. The other name that's mentioned as far as a non-Jewish king in the story is Nebuchadnezzar.
Mm-hmm.
So this will also tell you that this is roughly the time of Daniel.
Yeah.
That this is happening. Because Nebuchadnezzar, which we're going to talk about him another week.
Yeah, maybe next week.
Maybe next week. But we're going to talk, but Nebuchadnezzar is a whole other awesome story. But Nebuchadnezzar, and in his time as king in Babylon, he was known for being arrogant and prideful, right? Like the Babylonian Hanging Gardens were known as one of the wonders of the world,
mm-hmm.
right? This king that was out in the desert, but he had these lush hanging rooftop gardens. So these are the powers that you have at B. And when you're talking about Egypt wanting to restore who they were, the one thing that actually caused their initial downfall was the Exodus.
Mm-hmm.
So Israel leaving was one thing that actually caused their wealth downfall because a lot of their workforce, their slave labor, went away.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have this king being like, no, I want to bring us back to those glory days. Mm-hmm. So part of me wonders, and there's nothing in a text on this, and I don't have any historical account on this, but part of me wonders, like, was Necho thinking of, man, I want to bring the Israelites back into slavery to show that our gods are as powerful as their God.
Right. That is, by the way, that is like not textual analysis, no. But more of just like.
That's not textual analysis at all.
Personal thoughts and insights.
Yeah. But I think there's applicable life lessons there, mm-hmm. right? Right. We're oftentimes we can be like, we're going to put our quote unquote gods up on the same level as God mm-hmm. and say these things are just as important.
Right. We absolutely do that.
Yeah.
And it's always in this place of like priorities and like where you place God in your life that mm-hmm. leads to a lot of downfall.
Yeah. Because right? If you read the story, especially the Second Chronicles account, Necho is actually acknowledging the existence of the Israel God.
Mm-hmm.
He's actually trying to twist the words of God around and saying, actually, no, God wants me to come in and take over these trade routes. Right, he's trying to speak a language to Israel that says, no, God wants me to do this. Right, so he's acknowledging the existence of the Israelite God,
mm-hmm.
of Yahweh. But he's also trying to bring him back to the glory days, and he's trying to say, hey, okay, your God is powerful, but our gods are just as powerful.
Mm-hmm. Right? I think it's interesting that that Josiah reinstituted observation of the Passover.
Mm-hmm.
Right, Passover celebrating the exodus of what?
Egypt,
where God, where God through the 10 plagues, he is actually pronouncing judgment on the gods of Egypt.
Uh-huh.
Right. And now you got Necho coming back to this king who's now reinstituted this remembrance of Egypt mm-hmm. saying like, hey, our gods are something too.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe invite him to a Passover dinner. Yeah. Remind him of the story, right?
Yeah. And contextually for Egypt, Egypt's coming out of this phase where they actually had a pharaoh, Osiris, a number of pharaohs ago, who instituted that they're only going to worship the sun god. And Egypt's actually coming out of this phase and going back to their multi-god worship. And so then you have Necho coming into Egypt saying, like, by the way, our gods are just as great as yours.
And, it's not working out that way.
Mm-hmm.
And
what happens to Necho at the end of the story is that he actually is driven out of the land by Nebuchadnezzar.
Mm-hmm.
Right, you have Necho coming into Israel saying, our gods are just as good as your God. Our culture is just as good as your culture. And part of me wonders, and like this is a little hyperbole, this is a little speculation, so please do not take this as theological doctrine. Part of me wonders if God was like, yeah, no, this is my land. Sorry. Get out.
Yeah.
And uses Nebuchadnezzar to make that happen.
Well, this also comes back to there's a prophecy in the book of Daniel, which, by the way, is happening around this time, right? Mm-hmm. Where there's like this tower with like multiple different types of metal, right?
Yeah.
And it's getting crushed and then crushed and then crushed. And if you know the history of what's going on during this time, you're like, well, the Assyrians tried to come in, you know, and Sennacherib was like, oh, I'm going to go and do this. And then, nope, God knocked him out. And then the Egyptians come in. They're like, well, we're going to take over the trade routes. Nope. They get driven out by the Babylonians led by Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar is then deposed by Darius.
Mm-hmm.
Darius is then taken over by the Persians, who's King Ahasuerus, mm-hmm. right? And also known as, what was his name? Xerxes.
Yep.
And so, like, you keep hearing these, like it's nation after nation is like, oh, we're bigger, we're stronger, we're unsustainable. All the way to the eventually you have this nation by the name of Rome
mm-hmm.
that is like nothing anybody had ever seen.
Yeah.
And then they're toppled by a rabbi.
Mm-hmm.
Who dies on a cross.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love the way that God does these things in the world, right? Mm-hmm. Because the invitation of these kings is always like, accumulate power, go and control the places. And God says, plant yourself in the center of all the conflict
mm-hmm.
and be the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Remember where I brought you from.
Mm-hmm.
Plant yourself in the middle of chaos. So
by the way, where was Israel again?
Crossroads of the world.
Mm-hmm. Right? Right? God put his nation in the center of everything to where if Babylon wanted to trade with Egypt, they had to go through Israel. Right? Same with Syria, so on and so forth. Like, the whole known world had to go through Israel at that time It's actually part of the reason why Rome was like, we have to take this over, right? Yeah. In their expansion. So planting yourself in the middle of everything that's going on so that you can be a light to those around you. Because here's the reality. It will change your community.
By the way, if you think this is like we're overhitting this, I want to read you something from the Sermon on the Mount from Jesus. Mm-hmm. After he's gone through the Beatitudes and he says, blessed are this, right? He says this to his disciples and everybody listening. You are the salt of the earth. Right? Mm-hmm. Where does salt get put? In the dish. Mm-hmm. Right? If salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salt again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it in the stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. Mm-hmm. Sounds a lot like I'm going to put you at the crossroads of the world and call you to live a different way.
Yeah.
And you're going to have Assyrians, and you're going to have Egyptians, and you're going to have Babylonians, and you're going to have Romans, and you're going to have Greeks that are all going to come up and rise up and be like, our way of life is the best, and you can't stand against us. Mm-hmm. And yet here we are, thousands of years later, and what nation is still standing? Israel. Mm-hmm. Now, do those people live into the covenant? There's a conversation about that. Mm-hmm. But God says, I want you to go be in the crossroads of the world and put a different story on display. Mm-hmm. And so then I think the challenge for us, Gentile followers of Jesus and Jewish followers of Jesus, 100%, right? How do we go stand in the crossroads of our world?
Yeah.
And live in such a way that we're a light on a hill that's not hidden. Mm-hmm. That we're salt and light to a world that desperately needs preservation and illumination.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love that part in the Sermon on the Mount, because especially the light of the world, because I've always read it a little tongue in cheek a little bit, because it's Jesus is saying this and people listening, they're probably like, there's probably a mix between like, oh, that's really profound. And like, yeah, no duh, you don't hide a light underneath a bucket, right? Like you have Christ in you. Mm-hmm. So when you go into a dark place in the world, that light is supposed to illuminate that dark place.
I had a conversation with a friend of mine who used to work in prisons, right? And he was just talking about how prisons are very depressing and dark and full of, you know, just tons of stuff. And he's like, yeah, I just don't know if I want to work there anymore. I was like, do you know that you may be the only Jesus that people see for the entire time they're incarcerated? And he was like, and so then we like talked like a couple weeks later, and he's like, it's crazy because I've been praying and asking God to just like use me just with my presence, because he's only able to do so much as a officer, right?
Yeah.
But he's like, I never realized that just me physically being there brings the presence of God into those places.
Yeah.
And I feel like sometimes we discount how much our presence makes a difference.
Yeah.
Not because of us, but because of who's great inside of us.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Kings and kingdoms, man.
Yep. So if there's any takeaway from today, put yourself in the crossroads, right? And see what the Lord does. Second thing I would say is don't be like the kings of the outside and try to push your way into someplace you're not supposed to be. Mm-hmm. Right? Because let's just be real. That never ends well. When you try to force yourself into a place you're not supposed to be. Just be where you need to be. Be the light of Jesus and see what happens.
Mm-hmm. If you're listening and you have thoughts on the last few kings we've talked about, please continue to send those to us at loveandcontext@gmail.com.
Yeah.
We would love to integrate those into our conversation. They may not show up in this series just because of the recording schedule. Mm-hmm. But we would love to talk about it at a future date.
Mm-hmm. We are not talking about every foreign king in the Bible. Right.
There's a lot of them.
We've selected a few that we thought were significant, and those are the ones we're talking about. So if there's other ones that you're like, hey, I would really love to hear about kingship, blah, 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 you know, because that's definitely a real.
You have to pronounce it correctly if you want us to talk about it.
Yeah. That was my tribute to Pastor Nick trying to pronounce Hebrew names right there.
Oh, hey, you know what? Actually, I do have one little random tidbit for people before we go. Did you know that Cleopatra is closer to today's date than she was to the creation of the pyramids?
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is crazy.
That is a crazy fact, isn't it? So I was reading that just the other day when I was scrolling through something. Now, somebody can totally fact check me on that, but that totally sounds right.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
Because she was around Christ's time
mm-hmm.
when that happened. Yeah.
Whereas the pyramids are like 3000 BC.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So if you have kings in the Bible that you want us to talk about, let us know.
Yeah. Otherwise, we'll catch you next time.
Yep.
And that's a wrap for today's episode of Love and Context. We hope you enjoyed this engaging conversation and gained valuable insights into the powerful message of love within the Bible. We'd love to hear from you and continue the conversation. Connect with us by sending us your questions, thoughts, and suggestions to loveandcontext@gmail.com. We greatly appreciate your feedback and ideas for future episodes. Stay connected with us on social media for updates, behind-the-scenes content, and additional resources. You can find us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and Facebook at Love and Context. Don't forget to hit that follow button to stay up to date with the latest episodes and join our growing community.
Thank you for being part of the Love and Context family. Remember, love is at the heart of it all. Until next time, keep seeking wisdom, embracing love, and living out your faith in the context of today's world.